Real life stories of real life men. These are the many voices of the Brothers in Blue Reentry Program. Real voices.
Growing up was a little different. My dad wasn't around after 6 months after I was born. Every time I saw him, I'd either be getting beaten or verbally abused. The only thing I got from my dad is good work ethics. Throughout my childhood, I always lived with my mom. I only went to my dad's about every other weekend for a while until he kicked me out.
And what did he kick you out for?
He said I was a bad influence on my little brother and sisters.
And was there any basis for that?
No. He just saw that I started to get in trouble and thought I'd be a bad influence. But yet, I was a totally different person over there.
Were you?
Had to be. All right. You gotta please a monster.
Our inmate today exemplifies family structure gone wrong. From early on in his life, his shortcomings were magnified. His male role model, his father, hurt him both physically and emotionally. Parental figures play such a defining role in a young man's life, and this inmate was taught hostility and condemnation. And so guess where he's ended up as a result? Spoiler alert, he's in prison.
Welcome to this week's edition of Real Voices. This recording is one inmate sitting down to interview his fellow inmate. Ask our framed questions in want of real answers. Nothing sugarcoated, but at essence, real dialogue in hopes of glimpsing a moment in the life of one. His reality, his life, right or wrong, his story. This recording is meant for mature audiences only. The only editing done to this recording was to clarify statements or omit extraneous information that didn't serve the purpose of this recording, which is simply to offer vignettes of a life. Thank you for listening to Real Voices.
What memories do you have of your father?
I have a couple. I remember one that got me to not talk about my feelings. I was 7. We were coming down by a life lake, going home for the weekend, and he turned to me as we're in the middle of the road and down a big steep hill, stopped the car, turned to me and goes, "You talk way too much." Since then, I don't talk about my feelings. I just talk about things that really don't matter. Just kind of a big joke. I used to have to ask to go ride my bike. Yeah, well, your kid's supposed to ask. But a kid's supposed to be able to go more than 3 houses down when he's 14. And there was a park less than a block away that I wasn't able to go to just because he wanted to be a control freak. I was a little kid. So when I went over to my dad's, there was no friends. There was no phone. There was nothing. It was just throw him in the basement, keep him quiet.
Tell me about your mom, your relationship with her.
My mom was always off to work and a workaholic, hiding behind that. She's very a quiet type of woman that doesn't talk about anything. Likes to throw money at stuff.
And you want more than just the money?
Yeah, there's a lot more life than just throwing money. Yeah. It's okay, it's like basic mottos. Oh, you got a problem? Oh, here's some money. She just doesn't talk. Her excuse is, well, in our family, we don't talk like that. We don't communicate that way.
The attention that our inmate clearly craves was not provided by his parents. So, he went seeking it from peers. He needed validation. He needed company. He needed love. He desperately clung to his stepbrothers for a sense of family.
I grew up with 3 stepbrothers. They're older. One of my brothers is 9 months older than me. The other one is 1 year and 9 months older than me. And then the other one was 7 years older than me. So I grew, my childhood was flourishing. Through high school and all of the grades, it was just 1, 2, 3.
So you kind of had a little crew within your own family.
Yeah, let's just say the crew in high school and junior high when we were all in the same school. Let's just say my mom got lots of phone calls. And I think that was one of my biggest downfalls too. Mm-hmm. Growing up too fast, living with people 2 years older than you.
So where do you think that all that went wrong?
A lot of it went wrong as soon as I started smoking weed. I started hanging out with the wrong people. I would be the guy that the party wouldn't start until I was there. Everybody looked for me for the jokes and for the laughter and to be the center of the party to make sure it's always going. I always came through. But it was all just a mask, and I was hiding behind it. And once you're the center of attention, you just kind of go. You just got that charisma about yourself. And when you really honestly don't care about what anybody else thinks, there's kind of that problem where you really don't care and you might fool yourself for a joke. People start to love you.
So he was getting attention, sure. But even though he was surrounded by people, he still felt alone. He had plenty of acquaintances, but no true friends. He had lost sight of the fact that it wasn't merely attention he was craving, it was connection.
Really haven't had a friend, to say the least. The friend that I did meet ended up snitching on me, which, yes, I did the crime, but ended up trying to have him get out of trouble to turn somebody else in. And so I've kept people at a distance because of that, because of the trust issues and because of the things that have happened in my past and not having trust with your own parents. I have nobody else, no family to turn to. You're left alone. And left and turned to one friend, my partner in crime. It was us against the world, kicking it, and ended up getting and doing what we did to get in trouble. But we were living together, roommates, and ended up turning me in just to get out of his trouble.
And so what exactly did he snitch on you for?
He wore a wire and came and bought for me.
And bought marijuana?
Yes. I'm in here for selling and distribution.
Okay.
A little bit of check fraud on the side. So, I don't know, I was pissed, but yet, honestly, it led to ending up saving my life and was for the best thing. In the grand scheme of things, it was just the grand design to get me to where I'm at today.
While everyone he had known, or even relatively trusted, had essentially turned their backs on him, in stepped a saving grace, the one person who could break down his walls and eventually love him without fail. Our inmate met his future wife.
My angel. She came about right after I got out of county jail and was starting to go to court for my distribution. I've known her, seen her, or met her around, hung out with her at a party a couple times when she was dating one of my friends. None there. I knew that we had a fun, flirty night, but, you know, she was with my boys. So one day I cracked open a couple beers, got a six-pack after work, and me and Terry were sitting there working. Still got paint and all kinds of caulking and stuff on us, and sitting there, and here she comes walking down the stairs from his apartment. And it was like, the only thing I could say was, "I know you." That's like the only thing out of courage I could say. Right. I was pretty much tongue-tied, and from there, pretty much life started from there. One night, her roommate moved out, so she invited me, her friend, and her boyfriend to spend the night because they had two rooms. And still trying to be Mr. Superhero and slept on the floor. I was tired of having the same emptiness. Yeah. And so was she. She had one dream that I can remember. I woke up to get ready for work, and she's like, I just had a dream that we ran off and got married. Light went on. Right there, I knew that I was gonna marry this woman. I remember the first time I told her I loved her. I was so scared that I said it, because it just came out, that I didn't say it again for 2 days. And she yelled at me after I said it again. And then I asked her to marry me, gave her a ring. We got married on September 13th, 2010, at 5 o'clock at night. 2 days later, on the 15th of September, at 10 a.m., I'm going to court for sentencing, expecting, okay, well, I just got married, everything's good, and, you know, I started straightening up the last month. It's like, all right, I got my life together. I see what I got to do, you know, this is what I want, I'm going to continue. I went to court, and I got completely shafted. I went in there, find out not only was I being denied recovery for my drug addiction because I had a fighting charge when I was 15, so I got 5 years. The whole world was devastated. Didn't even get to go on my honeymoon.
Well, talk about a curveball. Typically, when looking at the blueprint for a new marriage, a 5-year prison sentence isn't exactly recommended. But nonetheless, our inmate found himself on his way to the facility in Norton, Kansas, still shocked that he was going to prison.
Just felt crushed. It was a big cultural shock. I didn't ever think I'd be going to prison. My wife sent me some books. I spent my birthday in there. She sent me some books, so I had some alright books to read.
So, what was your reaction when you first found out that you were getting sent to Norton?
Honestly, I was like, what am I going to do? That is so far away. That is literally out of nowhere. Went to Norton. Got there, and it looked like a college campus. Wasn't what I expected prison to look like, you know. In Norton, it's not like being in Lansing. The staff there are extremely disrespectful, extremely rude to you, and write you up for anything. Norton was just a culture shock. They have their own rules out there. No matter what you do, you're guilty. No matter what you say, you're guilty. No matter what they want to do, you're in the wrong.
Okay. And so how did this move affect your marriage?
I called her one day out in Norton after about 2 months, and she told me, if by your next review you can't get transferred, I'm moving out there. Shocked me. Moving out to the middle of nowhere in a small town.
And so then what was it that made you decide to apply for Brothers in Blue, or IFI at the time?
Honestly, I was ready for a change. I had already enlisted into a couple Thinking for a Change classes and all the classes there, and they pretty much kept telling me after the only one that I could do was Thinking for a Change that I couldn't do any of the other ones because I didn't qualify. So IFI came around, and me and my boy decided we'd do it. He has 3 kids he just went to court and fought for, and we're both ready for a change. Like I said, I was already working on it. Talked to my wife. And to find out that IFI is shutting down. And then, all of a sudden, in December, after I just finally got done completing my special project I had built them out in Norton, that the IFI people were coming back to do a interview. And there's 40-some people, and they're only going to take a handful of us. So I was a little bit of discouraged. But I was the first one there. And ready to go. Jerry Raziska and his wife were there to do the interviews. And the only reason they were in Norton was because it was convenient, because they came from a trip from Denver. So by the grace of God, I was one of the 6 that got there. So I came to the program, and it was also a big cultural shock. This is prison. The walls, everything.
Our inmate relocated to a new facility and a totally different culture. He was thrust into a group in Brothers in Blue that had already started and it was just expected of him to acclimate on his own.
I expected somebody to step up and tell me, like, what to do. Instead, I just kind of had to find out my own. There was no real community when I got here. It was everybody for themselves. If you screwed up, ha ha ha, that's your fault. Finally come to my wits and figured everything out. Took a while, took some pain, took a lot of stress. I moved rooms, ended up moving with the guy, and he was all right. He was like my ace in the hole. He's the only person in this program who I connected with, and the only reason I was able to stand living with four other people is the reason it got me on the right path. One day he told me that I can't help you if you can't help yourself, and that was so true. And I've always been my own worst enemy and sold myself short, knowing I can do it, but just don't want to fail, so I'd set myself up for failure myself. I got my act straight. Been on that path ever since. Got baptized.
Getting baptized was a big step for this inmate. He was finally finding connections with those around him and feeling a part of something that won't let him down. God, which was a far cry from how he felt about God when he first arrived.
I got into the program, I was real argumentative, and that was pretty much my own anger. Just wanted to disprove everything to make everybody else feel my pain, and come out to find out that I was only proving myself wrong and that everything I was arguing about was right.
Has the program helped you, or has it been something that you could have done on your own?
I couldn't have done it on my own. This program has helped not only supply me with tools and the information to see what's going on and how to deal with stuff, it's also given me the encouragement to do what I know I should be doing and tools to see things differently, to realize that it's not the end, this is just the beginning. You just got to continue to go on. So with that, I mean, without this program, I wouldn't be the person I am today. I wouldn't be as equipped to be a man of integrity, a leader, pretty much a man of God.
What does your wife think about this change?
She's still ecstatic. She stuck by me. She knew it was in me. She's always seen the best. It's just, I was afraid to show it. I was afraid to do it myself because of, I was afraid to succeed. I've always treated her different than I've ever treated anybody else. And that's one of the reasons why I am so blessed and have such an amazing wife. This program's taught me that this is the beginning. It's going to take time. It's going to take work. But you got to remember, no matter how hard it is during the day, to keep going at it. You still got to face the adversities and the stuff that goes on, and you will succeed.
So how are you going to use this? What are your plans? What are you going to turn this into?
I'm going to go out, and I'm going to stop all the generations between both my wife's side of her family and my side of the family. And the whole disconnection of family and stuff is going to stop here between me and my wife, and we're going to continue on in the right direction. So that the generations to go after us aren't going to live the same life that we had to.
Well, our inmate still has problems. We all do. But he understands that even though it isn't going to be a cakewalk, he can succeed. He can overcome this. He has a wife by his side that has done nothing but love and support him, and he's finally beginning to realize that trust and emotional transparency are possible. Our inmate will get out at the age of 24 in 15 months with a new perspective and a chance to save his family and spread the love that he has received from both God and his wife. He was given an opportunity to save his own life while in prison, and he took it. It sounds ironic, but he's become freer in prison than he ever was before, and now he's ready to translate it into allowing himself to
be a good man of God and lead my family in the right direction.
Wow. If only all inmates could have such simple goals. Thank you for joining us on Real Voices. Please tune in next week for our next installment.